Chapter 14. Truth and Other Lies.
"This is grim. There's no way to pretend it isn't," said Collier as they waded along.
"Your little girl, she'll be all right," said Blenner beside him. "I'm sure of it, Major."
He didn't sound convinced. In the half-light, Collier could see Blenner's stressed body language, as if he was trying to flee into himself because there was nowhere else left to go.
"I appreciate you trying to sound encouraging, Venom," he said.
"Well, that's what commissars are for," said Blenner, his laugh empty.
"That and other things."
Blenner sighed. His breathing had sped up.
"Comes with the territory," he said.
"Must be hard, though, that first time."
"I don't want to think about it," said Blenner.
"Sorry," said Collier. "We should keep our chins up."
Blenner nodded.
I'm finding that hard these days, Major," he replied.
"Sometimes you just need someone to talk to," said Collier. "A friend, you know. Otherwise, those things can build up inside. Lock a man's mind down. Make him do stupid things."
"Things?"
"I've known men fall apart," said Collier. "Turn to drink or abuse farms, just to keep the demons inside."
"Farms?"
"There's always a way back, Venom. You just have to open up and talk."
"I wish..."
Blenner began.
"What?"
"I wish you hadn't just said demons," he said.
Collier smiled.
"Venom?"
"Yes?"
"Earlier on, you remember? When I first came down into the billet. You were going to tell me something."
"Was I?"
asked Blenner.
"I don't recall."
"I do,"
said Collier.
"If ever I saw a man who was going to lift a burden off his shoulders, it was you. Then." "What was it?"
Blenner didn't reply for a moment. Then a little crushed squeak came out of him.
"I can't do it," he said.
Collier could barely hear him.
"The guilt. It's the guilt, you see. Just on me. On me all the time."
"Talk to me, Venom."
Collier had dropped his voice to a low hiss. They had slowed down, and the rest of Baskerville's squad was pulling ahead slightly. Blenner looked at Collier. His eyes were puffy and red. A little tick was making his left cheek twitch.
"Lokeen," he said. "It was stupid. So stupid. I was just trying to hold it together. They had their claws on me. I mean, I was properly screwed. They had dirt on me that would have... It would have been the end."
"Who?"
Blenner gulped and wiped his eyes.
"None of it matters now," he said. "It all seemed so important then, but now, here... Feth, it's so ridiculous. The horror here, our lives, death coming for us and no way out."
"Tell me,"
said Collier.
"What?"
Blenner uttered an empty laugh.
"A deathbed confession?"
"Think of it as absolution,"
said Collier.
"If this is going to be the end of us down here, then how do you want it to go? Don't you want to pass from this duty into the next life with a clear conscience?"
"Only in death, eh?"
"That's where they say it ends. Duty, that is. I don't know about guilt."
Blenner hesitated.
"I can't remember whose idea it was," he said softly. "Gendler, maybe?" "Wilder jumped at it. They pulled me in because they knew they could blackmail me into assisting. It was just money, Major. Just money. Gaunt's boy had so much, I mean, so much. Access to House Chass accounts. We didn't know, not then. We didn't know that the boy was not a boy."
"And?"
"Gendler was supposed to jump him in the showers, put the scares on him, and force him to transfer a little funding our way. That's all it was supposed to be. But Gendler, that Feth Diddy Gendler, he was heavy-handed. Knocked the boy down. That's when we came in. That's when we realized that the son was actually a fething daughter. Then Gendler, fething improvised. Decided she couldn't talk if she was dead."
He looked up at Collier.
"Ezra found them. I think he was watching Merity, shadowing her. He went in and he killed Gendler. Wounded Wilder. Then we came in and pretended to help him, though we'd been in on it all along. He killed Ezra. Said we could say that Wilder had done it. And that I'd found them and executed Wilder on the spot. No loose ends, you see. You see how that worked. He made me kill them, Gull. He made me shoot Wilder. Wilder was begging me not to, and I just...
Vainham? Vainham, listen. Who made you? Who was the other man in your group?
Merrin, said Blenner.
Collier clenched his jaw tight.
That little shit, he whispered. It was him. He killed Ezra.
Blenner nodded. Collier wanted to punch him in the face and then keep punching, but he held his rage back.
You've done the right thing, Vainham,
he managed to say.
The brave thing. You feel better now, right?
Blenner nodded again.
Good. All right. Let's deal with this, and if we survive it, we can deal with Merrin. You've done the right thing.
I just couldn't do it anymore, said Blenner.
Vainham, I need you to give me your weapon now. Your sidearm. Can you do that?
Yes,
said Blenner, and handed his pistol to Collier.
Good. I...
Goal! Baskerville's voice echoed back down the hallway. Problem?
No,
Collier called back.
Close it up. We don't want to lose the pair of you.
All right, called Collier.
He took hold of Blenner's arm and began to move him along the hall. There'd be time for anger later. He couldn't let it weaken him now. He couldn't let it break his concentration. There was too much at stake. They had just caught up with the others when the bone saw started shrieking. It sounded very close, as though it was just on the other side of the thick and unending stone wall.
"Our throne!" Baskerville cried.
He raised his weapon.
"Move!" he said. "Move! With me! Now!"
Luna Fazekiel started to tremble uncontrollably when she heard the bone saw howling again. It was very close, and persistent this time. The long, drawn-out shrieks of destructive wrath echoed down the hallways. She shoved her pistol into her belt to stop herself dropping it, and then clenched one hand around the other in an effort to control the trembling. Merrin looked up in fear, twitching with every echoing shriek.
"Feth," he whispered, "we're so feth and done. Just done. You know what? Feth him. Damn him. Screw him to hell. Feth and God, Emperor. He does this to us."
"Captain,"
Merity said, trying to hold her own terror back.
"What?"
he snapped, rounding on her.
"It's true. It's true, you stupid little high-hive bitch. We serve him. Serve him all our days, following his feth in light because he's the way and the truth and all that bullshit. And for what? This? This shit? If we are his children and he's our god, then he's a fethin monster."
"That's enough," Fazekiel said, her voice not much more than a stammer. Merrin sneered at her. For a notably handsome man, his face had twisted in an ugly way.
"What? That blasphemy, is it? Not the sort of thing a guardsman should say in earshot of his prefectus stooge. I don't care. Feth you. You know it's true as well. It's a joke. It's a farce. We give our lives every day, year on year, just to serve his great and inscrutable scheme. I have marched every bloody step from Tanith to this. There's never been any hope. There's never been anything but the most fleeting respite. And I've seen horrors. Horrors no one should see. And this is the reward. Trapped in a pit with some demon fiend. Feth, Terra! Feth the God Emperor!"
"I said that's enough, Captain," said Fazekiel.
Merrin looked away.
"What's he going to do?" he murmured. "Damn me! Curse me! There's no curse worse than this!"
He closed his eyes and clasped his hands to his forehead.
"There's never a way out," he whispered. "Never."
Fazekiel swallowed hard and took a step towards him, gingerly. She reached out one trembling hand in a futile gesture of consolation. Something black and thrashing landed on the ground between them, shrieking. They both leapt back. Merrin lowered his war knife.
"It's the Fethin mascot," he said.
He started to laugh. Somehow, Merity felt his empty, cold laughter was worse than the echoing demon shriek. She looked down at the wounded eagle. It was shuddering, its plumage a mess. Its remaining head jerked from side to side, regarding them with wild incomprehension.
"There it is! You see? There!"
The old Ayatani and Shoggy Domor appeared from a hallway beside them. They came to a halt and stared.
"Throne," said Domor. "I never thought we'd see another living soul again." "Shoggy,"
Merrin said in disbelief.
"Are the three of you all right?"
Zwael asked.
"Yes, father," said Merity.
"Glad of company."
Zwael looked at Fezekiel, then went over to her and hugged her tightly, pressing her head against his shoulder.
"There, there,"
he said, as she wept into the folds of his robe.
"It's all been a bit much, but we're coming through it now. The Emperor protects. He really does."
"No, he doesn't," said Merrin. "You hear that, right? That's the sound of death coming for us."
"Come on, Flynn," said Domor. "Father Zwael is..."
"What's he going to do?" asked Merrin.
"You know we're all fethed."
"I don't like your tone, young man," said Zwael,
releasing Fezekiel from his embrace. He looked at Merity with a sad smile and squeezed her hand.
"Your father will be proud," he said. "You've kept your reserve. Must run in the blood, eh?"
"I think my courage is about gone," Merity said.
"Courage is transient," said Zwael, "like flowers and pain, and also soft cheeses. The things that matter are the things that last. Faith, belief, and hope is surprisingly durable."
"I don't believe in anything,"
muttered Merrin.
"That would explain a lot about you," said Zwael. "I myself have belief to spare. I believe we're getting out. I believe we'll live."
"You mad old bastard," said Merrin.
"Father Zwael may be mad," Domor began.
"It's been said,"
Zwael agreed with a chuckle. He had stooped down to comfort the eagle, cooing at it and stroking its feathers.
"But I trust him," said Domor. "He's got me this far."
"I'd hate to think what sort of shit you were in before then," said Merrin.
"Are you going to stay here, or are you going to follow us?" Domor asked.
"Where to?"
asked Merrin. The bird shook out its wings, squawked, and took off again.
"That way,"
said Zwael, pointing to it as it flew off.
"You're following the Fethan bird?"
asked Merrin.
"We're going to the light," said Zwael. "Come on."
He took Merity by the hand. Merrin just shook his head in despair.
"He's not wrong," said Domor.
They all looked at him, even Zwael.
"I'm not?"
he asked. Domor adjusted his optics.
"I'm reading light down there, right where the bird flew. Outside light. Throne. It can smell fresh air."
"Are you joking?" asked Fezekiel.
"No," said Domor.
He set off, striding urgently down the hallway. They followed him.
"See," he called back. "Do you see this?"
There was light ahead. A pale shaft of light slanting down.
"It's the steps," Domor yelled. "It's the Fething steps."
They caught up with him. There was no sign of the eagle, but ahead was a broad flight of stone steps. It was, without doubt, the entry steps that connected the Undercroft with the upper levels. Thin light shone down from above. Domor grinned at them, then gave Zwael a hug.
"Come on," he said. "The Emperor was watching us after all."
"A little faith, Shoggy,"
said Zwael, leading Fezekiel up the steps after Domor.
"I told you, boy. A little faith, I said."
Merity glanced at Merrin.
"I hope he wasn't watching you," she said.
"Movement, sir," the Urdeshi trooper called out. "More survivors coming up."
Grey pushed his way to the front of the Urdeshi detachment, covering the Undercroft door. Domor appeared, leading the others the last of the way. They looked around, blinking in the light, staring at the armed and armoured soldiers surrounding them. Power was still out in the entire palace, but Grey had set up portable light rigs with battery cells that bathed the doorway area.
"How many of you?" asked Grey.
"Five, sir,"
Domor replied.
"Tanith?"
Grey asked.
"Yes."
"Trooper Zent,"
Grey said to a subordinate.
"Get their names, then escort them to the Medicare area."
He looked back at Domo's bedraggled party.
"Did you see anybody else down there? Anything?"
"It's a warp incursion, sir," said Fezekiel. "Something's loose."
"We are aware of that, Commissar," replied Grey.
"Are you Fezekiel? It was your Amber Alert that got us mobilized in the first place."
"What's happening up here, sir?" asked Domo.
"Power's down," said Grey. "We think it's a result of the incursion. Come on, let's move you clear and get you seen to."
"How many others got out?"
asked Merity. Grey looked at her.
"Are you Merity Chass?"
"Yes," she said.
"That's a blessing at least," said Grey. "How did you find your way out?"
"We stuck together," said Merrin. "Just saw it through and looked for an exit."
Merity glared at him. She was too tired to qualify his reply.
"Good job, Captain," said Grey.
I'm sure the Lord Executor will commend you for seeing his daughter safe.
I asked how many got out, Merity said.
About 30 so far, said Gray. Mainly retinue, badly traumatized. I hear it's grim down there.
Grim as hell, sir, said Merrin.
Where is my father?
Asked Merity.
Gray glanced at the doorway. He's gone in to eradicate the threat, he replied. The BT is with him.
That's a mistake, said Merity. You have no idea. It's a horrifying, destructive force. You should be closing the area off and purging it, or sending in a battalion strength of heavy troops.
Our resources are limited, said Gray. The palace is defenseless. All systems are down, and the archenemy is striking at the city. As soon as you've checked out, you'll be joining the evacuation.
I'd prefer to stay, sir, said Merity.
Not a choice you get to make, said Gray. Even the War Master is being moved clear. They were led up two floors, through palace hallways, lit only by emergency lanterns. In the night outside, heavy rain beat against the windows. It was strange not to be able to hear the constant fizzle of the palace void shields. A prayer chapel had been converted into a medical post. By lamplight, Medicaid staff were checking all survivors brought in. Most of the survivors were sitting in the chapel pews, silent and huddled, staring and exhausted. Merity saw women from the retinue and a few children. Their clothes were dark with dried bloodstains. Nearby, Beltane and Trooper Purday stood with Bonin, Eurolamu, and Luhan, waiting for news. Domer and Swile went over to them immediately. Merity saw Domer and Beltane talking with animated urgency. Bonin, Luhan, and the Sergeant Major moved with the dull, blank stupor of the profoundly combat-shocked. Urdeshi corpsmen led Merity and Fezekiel aside for examination. Merin just sat down on a pew, refusing attention. The corpsman with Merity went to take her carbine away. She shook her head.
I want to keep it, she said.
She sat patiently on a metal stool while a palace medique checked her eyes with a light and took her pulse. An eerie calm settled her, the empty void that followed protracted stress. Her hearing became muffled, and everything seemed like a dream. The hollow faces of the silent survivors, the low murmur of voices, the clink of medical equipment in chrome trays, the flutter of candles, the wink of light on the gold leaf adorning the old frescoes on the chapel ceiling.
Thank you,
she said quietly. Fezekiel was sitting on a stool beside her while an orderly took her resting pulse.
What? She said. You got me out of there, said Merity.
Not really, said Fezekiel. Father's Wile was right. You kept it together.
I didn't want to die, said Merity.
She glanced at Fezekiel. The commissar was letting the orderly remove her coat.
You kept it together better than me, Fezekiel said.
That thing, that noise, it's haunted me since Lokeen.
I can't explain.
Domer and I, Blenna too, we all heard it there, and I think it made us...
What?
Vulnerable. More susceptible to fear. I don't know.
I know I've never been that scared before. I know I shouldn't have been that scared. That lost.
It doesn't matter, said Merity.
You didn't break like that bastard Merin.
They looked across the chapel at Merin, sitting alone, a brooding look on his face as he stared at nothing.
I think he saw more than us, said Fezekiel.
Maybe, Merity said.
She looked at Fezekiel. It's not important now. Throne knows it's trivial. But when this is done, you need to talk to him, she said.
To Merin?
Merity shrugged.
About the incident. I couldn't stay down there because he was with you. You kept asking.
But that's why I came to find you.
I remembered hearing him speaking to Dalin just outside the shower block, just before it happened. You think Merin was involved?
Yes, said Merity. He almost admitted it to me in the Undercroft. He warned me to keep my mouth shut.
Fezekiel nodded.
I'll break him, she said.
I'll end his career. Once he's confessed, it'll be sanctioned for him.
Merin sat alone, on the far side of the chapel. Merity Chas sat with Fezekiel, orderlies bustling around them. They were talking. That's how you get treated, he thought. That's the privilege right there. The daughter of the Lord Executor. So fething special. People give thanks to see she survived. She was nothing. Just a high-hive aristo bitch, born into wealth and power. She knew nothing about real life, and certainly nothing about soldiering. Merin did. He'd been a ghost since Tanith. He'd come all that way, watching his own back because no other bastard would. He had the skills. He'd learned them along the way. How to fight to survive. How to defeat an enemy that was going to kill you. How to use a blade. And, thanks to the damaged bastards they brought in after Vervenhive, how to read lips. He watched them. Merity Chas and Luna Fazekiel. He watched them talk. Gaunt held on to Kurth's arm and dragged her through the darkness. The air was freezing and howling around them, and the water in the chamber was thrashing, like waves driven by an ocean gale. They could hardly see. The bad shadow was everywhere, lashing out tendrils of hideous fractal darkness, folding light into void blackness along sharp, straight lines. Gaunt hauled her against one of the chamber's stone columns and lashed out into the elemental fury. Whatever his power blade struck, it caused a huge spray of sparks, as though he had shoved the sword of Hieronymo Sonder into a grinding lathe. There were flashes in the churning darkness, weapons discharging. Over the shriek of the bone saw, Gaunt heard the rasp of Hark's plasma gun and the rapid snap roar of hell guns. The scions.
Yonsi! Kurth yelled in disbelief. Yonsi!
Hold on! Gaunt yelled back over the tumult. Sariadze suddenly appeared, staggering through the crashing waves. His upper body had been slashed in a dozen places, and all his fingers were missing. He tried to cling to them. Kurth attempted to hold on to him and pull him close. He looked at them in desperation, pleading in his eyes, no words coming from his gaping mouth. The sharp edges of the darkness seized him from behind, jagged and piercing, like negative lightning. It ripped him away from them. In the split second before he vanished from sight in the lofting spray, he disintegrated as though his entire body had been pushed through a mincer. Light suddenly bloomed through the chamber, a fierce golden glow that began in the heart of the place and flowed outwards. The tendrils of shadow retreated swiftly with an angry crackle. The surging water calmed to rocking waves. Gaunt looked around. He saw Hark two pillars away, leaning against the stone column for support. His leather coat was shredded, and his cap was gone. His augmetic arm had been torn off, leaving only a stump of sparking, torn biomech. With his one good arm, he clung on to Inquisitor Lakshima. She was limp and drenched in blood, and her augmetics, even her beautiful gold mask, were crazed and scratched as though they had been sandblasted. Smoke was billowing from the golden cuff on her left wrist, where intricate and powerful digital weapons had overloaded and burned out. There was no sign of Oban or Dower or any of the scions, except Sancto, who was on his knees, the water up to his sternum. He was clutching his torso, bloody spittle drooling from his agonized mouth. The saint was in the center of the chamber, at the very heart of the light. It shone out of her. All around her, the frothing, churning water had smoothed to a mirror stillness. She was locked in combat, her sword flashing as she swung two-handed into the beast attacking her. The woe machine. It was a shadow mass three times her size, a focus of darkness penned in by her radiance, but still lashing and rending with razor tendrils. It was hard to look at, and harder still to define, a cloud of knife-edged shadow that shifted and swam in supple, geometric patterns. It had a constantly changing texture, like rippling mirror scales, part absolute void, part iridescent black, like the wing cases of some demonic beetle. It was a storm of whirling midnight black thorns surrounding a super-dense core of immaterium darkness. But the worst part wasn't the look of it, the churning, abstract nightmare. It was the feel of it, the intense quality of primal horror that radiated from it, the eager, inhuman malice of pure annihilation. It was Asphodel's perfect vengeance weapon. It was the anti-saint. The Beatty was covered in lacerations, blood streaming from a thousand knife cuts. Her clothing was shredded, and her breastplate and armor pitted and scoured. Her sword whirled in her hand, deflecting the oil-thick darkness that lashed and tore at her. Her sword was not especially large, nor was it particularly extraordinary, just a standard, bulk-issue officer's weapon. It was the force she imbued it with that counted. A crisp green aura shone around the blade, and where it struck, the darkness burned. She was drawing on all her power, channeling from a distant and almighty source. The divine light pouring out of her had caged and contained the woe machine, at least temporarily. She thrust and stabbed to end its existence. A phantom shadow of wings, huge and made of emerald light, had sprouted from her back. A halo of bright light surrounded her head.
"We have to help her," said Dower,
appearing at Gaunt's side. He was soaked to the skin, his uniform torn. He was covered in small wounds. Gaunt nodded.
"She has it pinned," he said. "She's contained its power."
He and Gaunt moved forward together.
"Don't be fetting idiots!"
Kurth yelled after them. Sancto saw them moving forward. He got up with a raw growl, clutching his hellgun with one hand and a terrible belly wound with the other. Something had slashed clean through his body armor and almost gutted him. All three of them fired into the shadow, assaulting the saint. It barely seemed to notice Dower's shots or the blast from Sancto's weapon, but the explosive round from Gaunt's bolt pistol blew a hole in it. Thorns spiraled away, like a swarm of insects driven from a nest. In seconds, the damage had reformed, and the thorns had rejoined the main, whirling mass. They all fired again, repeated shots. Oban stumbled up to join them, her hair matted with blood. She added her own shots to the fusillade.
"It won't die," she wailed.
"It's gonna die," Sancto snarled. "It took all my men. Took 'em all and shredded them."
The woe machine dropped back, still whirling and keening. The water under it rippled and seethed. The saint stood her ground, panting. Her ghost wings were fading and flickering, as if the power sustaining them was ebbing. Blood dripped off her armor. They went to her side, but she flung a hand to warn them back.
"It's still strong," she gasped. "Impossibly strong. But it's still not fully grown. It wants my power. It wants to feed on me so it can fully form, and then—"
"Then?"
asked Sancto, fighting back his pain.
"Then what?"
"Then it will do the Anarch's bidding and raise this city and everything in it," said the Beatty.
She took a step forwards.
"I won't let that happen," she said.
"Wait,"
Oban yelped.
"You're hurt," said Gaunt.
"That hardly matters," she said. "The Emperor is with me."
She took another step. The pitch of the woe machine's keening intensified again, the sawing shriek filling the air. Its intricate, churning patterns of leaden darkness and polished black grew more fierce. It surged to meet her. A storm of heavy lasfire blocked it, multiple weapons unloaded into it at full auto. Gaunt turned. Baskerville and Collier were advancing across the chamber, flanked by Dallin and the men from Baskerville's search squad. All of them were unleashing heavy, accurate suppression fire. Squad drill, close-focus fireteam pattern. 12 LAS rifles emptying sustained destructive force into the abomination. The woe machine roiled backwards like an angry mass of flies. Baskerville's men were reloading as they came, switching out dead cells for fresh ones as they ran dry, maintaining the punishing fusillade. The woe machine retreated further, darkness and fluid shadows spread out around the walls. Its thousands of individual razor-sharp cutting teeth chipped and rattled against the ancient stone walls. The temperature dropped. They heard stone blocks scrape and grind as it threatened to warp the Undercroft reality again. "Is it hurt?" Gaunt asked. The Beatty nodded.
"Hold fire!" Gaunt yelled to Baskerville. "Let's get in close. Save whatever you have left until we—"
"What is it?"
Collier asked. Gaunt looked at him.
"I—"
"Sir?"
"I was wrong," Gaunt said to him. "I was wrong, Gull. I'm so sorry. It's a woe machine. We brought it with us all the way from Vervenhive."
He could see Gull Collier's face twitch as he fought to control his reaction.
"Yonsi?"
he asked very quietly.
"It was never her, Gull," said the Beatty. "She was never real."
Dallin uttered a slow moan of anguish. He dropped his rifle and fell to his knees in the flood.
"That can't be true,"
he mumbled.
"That can't be true. It can't."
"That's Yonsi?"
Collier asked, his voice dull.
"Oh, Thrawn, Gull,"
Basque exclaimed, heartbroken.
"That,"
Collier said. He stepped forwards. Baskerville tried to hold him back, but he shook his dear friend's hand away.
"The warp has tricked us all," said the Beatty. "Lies are its first weapon."
"Feth that,"
said Collier, staring at the seething mass of darkness.
"I had a child. A child. I swore I'd—"
He stepped closer.
"I loved you, Yonsi," he said. "I would have done anything to—"
The howl of the saw barked at him.
"Yeah, you know me," said Collier. "You were human long enough. You know me. Can you kill me? Your papa? Eh? I think the warp made you too human. There's too much human in you still.
The Razor Storm shivered. Its frenzy decreased.
Yonsi,
Kolia called. He held out his hand.
You come back now. You hear? Come back to me. Come back to Papa.
The darkness shifted. Shadows folded, shearing and twisting into new patterns of darkness. A smaller shape formed. A vague human shape inside the buzzing cloud of thorns.
Yeah, that's right, said Kolia. That's good.
He looked at the Beatty. When he spoke, just the one word, there was a tiny break in his voice.
No,
he said. The saint's green wings reignited with power, brighter than before, and she plunged her blade into the shadow. The darkness exploded. Deaf, blind, dumb, insensible, they were all hurled backwards into the consuming void.